Hello.
Welcome in to Crossing Broadcast on a Tuesday. It's not a Monday. We know how the Monday show goes, right? We had a good run. It's been a hell of a ride, but I'm thinking it's time to go. Bum, bum, bum. No? Okay. So we had this moment yesterday where I realized I had a very big meeting that I had to be on for work. And I thought to myself, can I figure out a way to do Crossing Broadcast on Monday? And I was like, I'm committed. I'm committed to the people. I'm committed to all the people who tune in live on YouTube and on Facebook, which is currently down, and Twitter. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I can make it work. And then I saw that Jason Kelce was going to have an announcement. And I said to myself, self, nobody's going to give a shit what you have to say about anything on Monday, because all anybody's going to think about is Jason Kelce and the Jason Kelce announcement. Now, I think we all kind of knew where this was going, right? And he does announce his retirement, right? I think that there probably was a good chunk of the fan base who thought there was a chance that maybe Jason Kelce would make an announcement that this was going to be his last run. Did not happen, obviously. He said no keg videos this year. If you remember last year, Sirianni tried to entice Jason Kelce, and he made reference to that in his 40-minute retirement speech, that he was going to retire. And then Sirianni convinced him to put out some beer, to go straight to his heart with a keg of beer. And so here we are, a year later, no keg of beer. It's all over. It's all said and done. Good night. Jason Kelce retires as a Philadelphia Eagle. And the big thing, I think, was, you know, right after the season ended, there was this thing that was put out by Adam Schefter that Kelce was going to retire. And then there were, I think, those questions about journalistic ethics and about integrity and about the fact that it was very strange that Schefter seemed so keen on jumping in and throwing that out there without, like, why would you preempt a guy's retirement, especially a guy who's meant as much to his team and his city as Jason Kelce has? And I do think that that's something maybe we get into at some point today, just about how I thought it felt dirty in the moment when Schefter did that initially. And then Kelce, to his credit, very smart, using his platform, using New Heights, which is a podcast that quite simply has reached new heights. He kind of tried to, I think, take control of his narrative again. And I think that he went out there with the intention of trying to give people the idea that, like, maybe it's not over yet. You don't want to make a rash decision in the moment. And he ultimately chooses to walk away from the game. We saw going into yesterday's press conference that there were a lot of reserved seats, and then word leaked out that Travis Kelce was in town. And I think that's where, if you were somebody who was in the, I don't want to say in the denial stage, but in the, all right, maybe there's a chance phase, that it didn't happen. Like, once you saw Travis Kelce was going to be in town, and once you started seeing the pictures leaking out of the reserved seats, it was very clear that this was over, and that one of the most popular Philadelphia Eagles in, I don't know, decades, you couldn't even make the case maybe ever, one of the guys that people have gravitated to in a way that is largely uncommon, I think, especially in Philadelphia. You know, like, we have these moments where you go through hot and cold phases with players, and there's not a lot of longevity, just like across the board. If you think about guys that you kind of hold in this thought of, like, all right, when I think of an Eagle, I think of, and you usually come up with like five guys, right? And typically longevity is a really big part of it. And in the ever-changing landscape of sports, loyalty to a team isn't something that you see a lot of. And it's interesting because the Eagles are kind of at this, I don't want to say it's like a paradigm shift, but they're at this really critical juncture in their franchise where, like, you are starting to see more and more of the guys that were part of the Super Bowl winning team. A lot of them have already moved on. There were a few holdouts. And you're, I think, starting to have to grasp with the fact that, like, a lot of these guys are going to move on. The guys that were left, you know, the rumors came out yesterday that Fletcher Cox is likely going to retire. There was a report that came out that Brandon Graham wasn't flirting with retirement, but that the idea of him going back to the Eagles as a formality might not be that. And then, of course, you get Jason Kelce retiring. And so, you know, I started kind of racking my brain today with, when you think about these different teams over the years, the teams that have meant the most, you know, who do you think about? And I went back and I was thinking about the team that brought in Terrell Owens and brought in Javon Kearse. And I thought, like, all right, if you go back to that team especially, right, you've got McNabb, you have Westbrook, you obviously had T.O., who was a he went supernova. He burned very brightly, but burned out very quickly. And then you, like, think about that line, right? Like, you think about guys like Runyon. You think of Trey Thomas. You maybe think of, like, a Hank Fraley. And you think of, like, the defensive side of the ball and some of their best years with Jim Johnson, right? So you had your runs with Brian Dawkins and Jeremiah Trotter and Hugh Douglas. And I think people are going to be in a really interesting position now. You know, when you think about the team that won the Super Bowl and you think about the guys who remained afterwards, like, I think it's very fair to say that Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham are going to be forever tied to this. And it's interesting because they were kind of also part of the transition from, you know, your Celics to your Ertzes and from your Ertzes to your Goddards. And, like, just kind of gives you an idea of just how long these guys have been at it and how big and how meaningful and how impactful they've been to this team in the city. And so, like, when I think about Jason Kelce, it does feel like you're losing somebody who's, I think, like, a fundamental part of the fabric of what it is to be a Philadelphia sports fan. And I think the other thing that adds to it is you don't get to see a lot of these guys outside of what they're doing on Sundays, right? Like, so much of being an athlete now is figuring out a way to control your own narrative, put out what you want to be put out, your own, like, curated content, if that's the way that you decide to go, to stay out of the headlines for all the wrong reasons, to be in the headlines for the right reasons, or maybe to just simply fly under the radar. And Kelce's done this really great job since he's been here of you did not see a negative story about Jason Kelce. You didn't hear murmurings of a lot of negative, you know, things surrounding him. The worst thing I think happened was, you know, there was that one year where there was a thought that maybe the Eagles would move on from him because he was an undersized center. And there were questions about whether or not, you know, big people beat up little people. Remember the old Chip Kelly-ism about, like, could he do the job? I think there were questions about that, you know, maybe once or twice. But he persevered and he showed that he was not only one of the best centers in Eagles history, maybe in the history of the entire league. And so longevity was really big. I don't blame him for wanting to walk away. I think that it's fair to question whether or not he wanted to come back for one more year. You know, I think a lot of times guys, when they go out on a downer of a year like this one, there's a legitimate question about, like, do you really want that to be the last taste that you had of the league? And if you think that your team is close enough to potentially competing for a Super Bowl, like, is it a good call to walk away from it all? And only the player can make that determination, right? I think that, like, you know, if you're in the camp of, like, hey, this team was close enough, like, why not take one more run at the Super Bowl? I can give a very simple answer. Injury. The last thing that you want to have happen at the end of your career is an injury that takes you out, and then that's what takes you out of the game. If you are able to remain in this league for as long as Jason Kelce has and not suffered a massive, massive injury, especially at the end, and you get to walk away on your own terms, that's just something not a lot of guys get to do. And so I understand if that was a big part of it. And I'm also going to point out to the fact that he has young kids, he has a family. You know, if you watch the Kelce documentary, which I still haven't, I made it a point I wasn't going to watch the Kelce documentary on Amazon until after he retired. Not because I thought it was going to, like, sway my impression of him or it was going to make me, like, less objective, I guess, in analyzing, you know, the team and his role in it. But I didn't watch it, but I know a lot of people felt like an additional connection to him. And I think that, again, so much of his connection to the city has been the way that he's branched off. I mean, obviously, the Super Bowl speech is the thing that endeared him to so many people in this area. And it's something that makes him an all-time icon. Wearing the Mummers costume, going out, you know, it's the whole damn team. F them, right? All we got, all we need. Like, there was so much. And, you know, Craig, let's actually play this a little bit, because I think that we should all kind of appreciate this. Well, I'll sit back here. Let's enjoy Jason Kelce. And this will especially be nice for the people in the podcast feed as well after the fact. So let's make sure that's unmuted. Go full screen with it, Craig Olson. And let's enjoy Jason Kelce.
Welcome, All-Pro Center Jason Kelce. Philadelphia! You love the Eagles, let me get a hell yeah! You love the Philadelphia Eagles,
I'm going to take a second to talk to you about underdogs. I know Lane and Chris just talked about this, but I don't think that it's been beat home enough. Howie Roseman, a few years ago, was relinquished of all control pretty much in this organization. He was put in the side. He was put in the side of the building where I didn't see him for over a year. 2 years ago, when they made a decision, he came out of there a different man. He came out of there with a purpose and a drive to make this possible. And I saw a different Howie Roseman, an underdog, Doug Peterson. When Doug Peterson was hired, he was rated as the worst coaching hire by a lot of freaking analysts out there in the media. This past offseason, some clown named Mike Lombardi told him that he was the least qualified head coach in the NFL. You saw a driven Doug Peterson, a man who went for it on fourth and down, went for it on fourth and down in the Super Bowl with the trick play. He wasn't playing just to go mediocre. He's playing for a Super Bowl. And it don't stop with him. It does not stop with him. Jason Peters was told he was too old. Didn't have it anymore. Before he got hurt, he was the best freaking tackle in the NFL. McVay was told he didn't have it. Stephen Wisniewski ain't good enough. Jason Kelce's too small. Lane Johnson can't lay off the juice. Brandon Brooks has anxiety.
By the way, that was the best part
of
the speech.
Division one school.
I think. Lane Johnson can't stay off the juice.
Or Clement's too slow. Airplane ain't got it anymore. Jay and John can't stay healthy. Torrey Smith can't catch. Nelson Aguilar can't catch. Zach Ertz can't block. Brent Celek's too old. Brandon Graham was drafted too high. Vinny Curry ain't got it. Allen can't fit the scheme. Michael Thomas can't fit the scheme. Nigel Bradham can't catch. Jalen Mills can't cover. Patrick Robinson can't cover. It's the whole team. It's the whole team. This entire organization is a bunch of driven men to accomplish something. We're a bunch of underdogs. And you know what underdogs is? It's a hungry dog. And Jeff Statlin has had this in our building for 5 years. It's a quote in the O-line room that has stood on the wall for the last 5 years. Hungry dogs run faster. And that's this team. Bottom line is, we wanted it more. All the players, all the coaches, the front office, Jeffrey Lurie, everybody wanted it more. And that's why we're up here today, and that's why we're the first team in Eagles history to hold that freaking trophy. And you know who the biggest underdog is? It's y'all, Philadelphia. For 52 years, y'all have been waiting for this. You want to talk about underdog? You want to talk about a hungry dog? For 52 years, you've been starved in this championship.
You know what's up. You know what's
Everybody up. Wonders why we're so mean. Everybody wonders why the Philadelphia Eagles aren't the nicest fans. If I don't eat breakfast, I'm fucking pissed off. No one wanted us. No one liked this team. No analyst liked this team to win the Super Bowl, and nobody likes our fans. And you know what? I've just heard one of the best chants this past day, and it's one of my favorite, and it's new, and I hope y'all learn it, because I'm about to drop it right now. You know what I got to say to all those people that doubted us, to all those people that got us out, and to everybody who said that we couldn't get it done? What my man Jay and John just said, fuck you! No lies, 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 no lies,
There you go. That should bring you all the feels. Like, that should take you back. I was there. Craig, were you there? I'm going to ask Craig behind the glass. He was there. I remember we were talking about it as a Crossing Broad staff at the time. The maestro was like, oh, we're going to get a room at the Ritz. I was like, why? He's like, well, because then we'll be right there. We'll be right at the corner. And we're like, okay, well, I guess that can make sense. And then we got down there, and it was obviously, like, just as insane as you would expect it to be. And I'm pretty sure that we watched the parade go by from, like, the 20-something floor at the Ritz or something. Like, it was something ridiculous. But being in the city that day was crazy. I think we actually walked down for Kelsey's speech. There were just that entire moment. Like, that's the kind of thing that you wait for and you yearn for as a sports fan, is to watch your team reach the pinnacle. And they did. And he's such a big part of it. Without Jason Kelsey, without that speech, it's just another championship. Like, in the grand scheme of things, I'm not talking about in the city, but in the grand scheme of things, without that Jason Kelsey speech, there probably isn't a big memorable moment. Like, what do you think of when you think of championship celebrations, right? Like, a bunch of players get wasted. They say some, like, questionable things. You remember, like, Chase Utley, world champions, world fucking champions, and Jason Worth stands up with, like, the big red Hulk fist, right? Like, that's what people remember from that. It's not the heartfelt speeches, but that speech by Kelsey was next level. Now, I want to get to some of the things that he had to say in his retirement speech, because I think this also speaks to why he was so well-liked and, honestly, why so many people felt like they could relate to him. Like, in a sense, I feel like that, you know, you kind of like worry about like the parasocial relationship between people and athletes or people that they don't know, but they feel like they can bond with. And I want to start with Craig. Let's go with the one about him actually announcing his retirement, because he took, I think it was like a minute 40 before he was even able to really get himself composed to start the speech. But this didn't happen until very close to the end of it. So this is Kelsey officially announcing that he's retiring.
So this all brings us here to today, where I announce that I am retiring. Where I announce I am retiring from the NFL after 13 seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles. And today, I must admit, I am officially overrated. Vastly overrated. But fuck, it took a lot of hard work and determination getting here. And so this all brings us here to today, where I announce that I am retiring.
All right. So, Craig, we don't have to loop it again. There you go. So, another one of those endearing things, self-deprecating, that he was overrated, that he's always been overrated, right? He finally is able to get it out. Now, I do have a question, and I want to get to this in a little bit. Is there a chance he does come back? Is there a chance that he rescinds his retirement? We're going to get there in a little bit. Craig, next thing I want to get to from this was probably let's go to him getting drafted, him remembering what it was like to get the call from Andy Reid at the time and about the pride that his dad felt, because I think that's one that probably hit a lot of people in the feels. Oh, Craig. It's right. There we go.
I won't forget the call I got from Andy Reid on draft day and my father rushing into the room. With tears streaming down his face as his son's dreams had just been realized. It had just been announced on TV I had been drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. And I won't forget 2 years later, that same man and my brother receiving a call and him being drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs This time, the tears streaming down both my father and I's face, as my brother had just realized his own.
That's got to hit you, right? That has to hit you in the feels at least a little bit. That's like a, it's like the transition, right? It's almost like the passing of the torch. And like, granted, he was still an active player and he remained an active player for a long time. But like the difference between being the first one to break into the league and the pride that his dad felt, which I think a lot of people can relate to, I hope. Like, I hope everybody who watches or listens to the show has gotten to experience that, that sense of pride from a parent or from somebody that you look up to or that you care about. And then there's that almost handing off of that and being proud of your sibling or someone else who means something to you in life. And again, this is like the thing where you go like, it's no wonder that the city connected so well with him. But let's keep going. Let's keep hitting people in the feels, Craig. Let's expand on the relationship with his dad, because he had a very nice thing to say about his dad and the role that his dad has had in his career.
I think one of the best things a person can be in this world is a father. A father who is present, loving, devoted just may be the greatest gift a child could ask for in our society. And I have a damn good one. My father believed in me more than anyone. He believed in my brother. And whenever my own insecurities would arise or self-doubt would come in, he would stifle them with the warm embrace of belief, unwavering love and belief. My father worked in the steel industry in Cleveland for the majority of his life. I remember him taking me into a plant one time and standing in awe of the molten steel and watching a giant ladle containing a bunch of it hover over our heads just feet away. The heat radiated when the molten steel was in sight. And I remember thinking how utterly amazing my father's work was. He was the man and continues to be the man and father I strive to be.
There you go. A little bit more. Now, I will point out that while we're all here sitting in whatever it is, if it's your feels, if it's just like a nice appreciation of the guy, I will point out that Craig at one point here behind the scenes passed me a note. And the note was that the line about Jason Peters is even funnier because Kelsey technically retired before Jason Peters. Now, as many of you know, I've been very critical of Jason Peters and him absolutely executing one of the biggest grifts in the history of the NFL, playing on and off for the last like 5 or 6 years, not being able to stay healthy and on the field. But again, the bodyguard, great player, will be a Hall of Famer. But like sometimes you have to know when to let it go. And he's long past that, but he can live his best life. So all of this happens, and look, there are more, and like maybe we'll come back around to a couple of the things, but there's so much that I think goes beyond that normal relationship that a town has with a player. And, you know, there's a moment there, and we have all these things queued up, but I feel like we've gone far enough into this now. But, you know, moments of him talking about what it was like to lose to Travis Kelce and the feeling of pride that he felt, the same way that he felt pride when Travis Kelce got drafted, the sorrow and the pain of loss in the Super Bowl, but then also at simultaneously being so proud of his brother. And that's like another thing where it's just like one other level. Like, again, the guy kind of bared his soul yesterday. I want to get to the last one though, Craig, the one about his wife, because this is the kind of story you don't hear enough about in professional sports in general.
I won't forget the Eagles Christmas party in 2014 and heading out afterwards with a bunch of my teammates to Buffalo Billiards, where my life would change forever. That night, I'd meet my future wife. I still remember the moment she walked through the door. The first instance is burned in my retina. It was like she glided through the opening, an aura around her. Then she started talking. And I thought, man, is this what love feels like? She was beautiful and smart, serious yet playful. I knew it right away. I think it's no coincidence I have enjoyed my best years of my career with Kylie by my side. Every accolade I have ever received has come with her in my life. She has brought the best out of me through love, devotion, support, honesty, intelligence, and of course, the swift kick in the ass from time to time. She has also given me three beautiful girls and a life that increasingly brings me more fulfillment off the field than it does on. We've had a great run, Kai.
The reason that I say that you don't hear a lot about that is because, and like, I'll try to do this in like a nice and gentle way. When you are around teams and when you talk to people who have covered other teams, you hear a lot of stories, and a lot of them aren't reportable. And in a lot of cases, you don't want to do the digging on it because, like, it really doesn't matter, right? In the grand scheme of things, you're paid to cover a team, or some people are covered to pay teams. And you hear all kinds of things about infidelity, and you hear all kinds of things about guys away from the field or from the rink or from the court, and you're like, all right, well, that kind of sucks. Like, you want to believe that people are capable of, like, goodness in their hearts, and they're capable of all those good things that you want your kids to potentially look at these people as role models, if that's the way that they want to go. And you don't hear a lot of times where a guy goes out of his way to meaningfully shout out their spouse and the importance of their, you know, of their kids and their family. And I think that this is where, and I want to wrap this part of it because there's other things we need to get into today. But I think that the part where you start thinking about, like, what might have played a role in him retiring is he has young kids. And I think back to, it was a few weeks ago, he was on Shaq's show with my old co-host, Adam Lefko. And he talked, you know, Shaq said his advice to Jason Kelce was, enjoy your family. Enjoy your family. Because he said that in his case, he was living in this, like, 100,000 square foot house without his family. And, like, he didn't want to see that happen to him. And so I think that probably plays a big role. Now, the one thing that I'm going to throw out there that maybe is, you know, whatever, you know, maybe it's a little bit of, like, fan fiction here, but, like, indulge me for a second. He retired, and that's fine. And sometimes guys walk away from sports, and they walk away from their teams, and they know that it's time. In his case, he was still at the top of his game. He could still play. He didn't have that bad injury to end his career. The part of me that wonders, could he unretire? All right, let's play a scenario out. If there's an injury in training camp, I don't think Jason Kelce is coming back, to be clear. If the Eagles are in, like, week 12 and they are very much on path to compete for a Super Bowl again, and there's an injury on the offensive line, could they reach out? Could the Eagles reach out? I mean, they would have to. But would he come back? Now, T from the 203 says he ain't coming back. And you could totally be right. You very well could be right. But when you think about, like, what it is that I think causes so many problems with a player and with, you know, the work and home balance, you talk about training camp. You talk about all the mini camps, all the other things that you have to do. If it's a stretch run into the playoffs, I don't know. I think it's interesting. And, you know, he can say all the things that he wants to say right now about never being interested in coming back to play or about the next steps in whatever his career is going to be. I would fully expect that every network is going to make an active and hard push for him to grace their airwaves, either as a studio guy or as a color commentator. It makes all the sense in the world, right? All that said, like, some guys still get the itch. We'll find out. But what I can say, and I think what everybody can say after they watched his retirement speech yesterday, or you listened to parts of it here today, you wish him all the best. You wish his family all the best. He's given and been a major factor in arguably the most important or the most impactful sports memory that many of us have ever had in winning that Super Bowl. And like I said before, he was here for a long time, and there were no horrific stories. There were no negative headlines about Jason Kelce away from the field. And so we wish him the best. And I do hope that whatever he does after football makes him happy. I hope that he really does find that peace and that happiness and that that finality to it, that he doesn't feel the need to Jason Peters it and keep trying to come back every year for 7 years past when he was an effective player. All right, let's get to a little good note here, okay? So we're going to go from the link. Let's go across the street to Citizens Bank Park, because the Phillies executed a deal that is absolutely masterful. Masterful. They re-up their true ace, Zach Wheeler, to a three-year contract at just over $40 million a year. And I was honestly a little bit surprised when I saw it. John Heyman, I believe, is the one who had it first. Wheeler deal with the Phillies, $126 million over 3 years, no options. I was shocked. But I'm going to tell you why I was shocked. Because in the way that sports have gone, in the way that baseball contracts have gone, where we've seen a lot of top free agents, Blake Snell, are still out there, still potentially on the market, maybe overplaying their hand, I thought Zach Wheeler had the option to potentially not hold the Phillies over the barrel for his next deal, but I definitely thought that if he wanted to try to push for 5 years, there was a path. And again, he's their best pitcher. If you want to play the role of, hey, Aaron Nola still has the best stuff, or he's a workhorse, and you believe that Aaron Nola's the ace, you're wrong, but that's fine. I mean, everybody's allowed to be wrong. But Zach Wheeler re-upping for a three-year deal, massive hit, right? $40-plus million a year. That's great. That gives the Phillies financial flexibility going forward. I know that there's no cap in baseball, but it does give them the peace of mind that they don't have to worry about a Zach Wheeler 5 years from now with a reduced velocity and a lot of injury concerns. So, like, they're really effectively looking to maximize this window. I think a lot of this comes back to Bryce Harper. We've had this conversation on this show about Bryce Harper wanting an extension beyond his current deal. And, like, when you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, it's a massive, massive move for this team. It shows that they really are committed to winning. Is this the reason they killed Dollar Dog Night? You know, is this why? Did they have to go to a BOGO offer because they knew they were going to have to pay the Wheeler extension? No. Flyers had a Dollar Dog Night, by the way. They changed it from Dollar Pretzel Night to Dollar Dog Night, but I digress. This is a great move. Great move for the Phillies. It now takes any of the concern about a contract off the table. It allows them to go into this season without any distractions. And by the way, they could still be a player in free agency, or as Dombrowski, you know, and Middleton have kind of said publicly, you know, maybe the idea is hang on to whatever money you would otherwise splash in free agency in case a guy does become available before the deadline. This to me, for some reason, I don't know what it was, but this gave me the most hope, I guess, for the Phillies, just because they got it done. They got the deal done, and it doesn't hurt them in any way. And Wheeler has been, I think, better than advertised. And I was listening to MLB Radio. There was Justin Morneau was on, and he talked about the fact that, like, there were so many concerns with Wheeler's health. And when the Phillies signed him, a lot of people were kind of questioning the move of, like, could he actually stay healthy, and what would it look like? And listen, there have been times where he's had reduced velocity, right? There have been a few concerns. There have been a few nagging injuries. But, like, he's a legitimate stud at the top of the rotation. And so now we'll see if he lives up to the contract. I expect that he will. A couple other things here before we wrap, because we're gonna be back on Thursday. You know, it's a Monday Thursday show. We had to move Monday's show, so we're gonna have some stuff to talk about on Thursday. Sixers have won back-to-back games. It's pretty nice. Beat the Mavs. I mean, it's good, but we keep coming back to the same thing. I think most Sixers fans have come back to the same point time and time again, which is wake me up when the playoffs come. It's going to be interesting to see, like, where they're going to end up landing. I know that, like, you make the case all the time that every win matters, but it really does, especially in the Eastern Conference. They're currently in the fifth seed. They would face Jalen Brunson and the Knicks, although Brunson had an injury. Do I like that matchup for the Sixers? Not necessarily. Do I like the matchup against the Cavs a lot better? I do. Do I want to see them play the Bucks in the first round just because Doc Rivers is there? Maybe. Do I want to see them play the Celtics? Absolutely not. The Celtics right now are just playing on a totally other level. 29-3 at home, a true home court advantage. They've been sensational. They've won 11 straight games. Boston's going to win this conference. The only way that there's a chance for the Sixers is an injury to the Celtics, or they get back Joel Embiid with a couple weeks to go in the season, and he's able to get his conditioning up. But even then, I think we've kind of established where I'm at with this. But I do believe in them. I believe that they have a chance, if Embiid is healthy, to give any team in the first round and maybe the second round a run. But if you get to the Eastern Conference Finals and you have Boston on the other side, that is their ultimate rival, in the sense that, like, you hate them, but not a rival in the sense that you have not been able to get past Boston. We'll see. Two other things. One really quick football-related note. Saquon Barkley is out with the Giants. Will hit free agency. Now, I know a lot of people are wondering whether or not he'd be a good fit here. He's had injury concerns. Would you want to move heaven and earth for Saquon Barkley? Or do you want to pay the money that it's going to require to entice him? Probably not. But I will say that if there's a guy that could lift your ceiling tremendously, it would be Saquon Barkley. I think that there's no such thing as having too much depth at running back. And I do think that he would be a legit game changer. And you wouldn't have to ride him the same way that the Giants had to ride him. You can go running back by committee and maybe save his legs a little bit. And then you don't have to worry about as many of the potential injury concerns. So that's that. Now, the last thing I want to get to is a concern that I really do have in Philadelphia, and that is the Flyers' alleged rebuild. And I say alleged because I feel like, and I've been saying this on Snow the Goalie a lot, and I get some pushback from my co-hosts, but especially from Aunt Sanfoni. Not as much from Bundy. I think Bundy's seeing the light. But the Flyers went into the season saying, rebuild, rebuild, rebuild. And I said, cool, we need a rebuild. Absolutely need a rebuild. You need to bottom out, get yourself some elite talent in the draft, shed as many salaries as you can, and try to turn this thing around in 2 years, 3 years. And if you're not going to rip it down to the studs, then you at least have to, like, you definitely have to make some moves before the trade deadline, because you have a bunch of unrestricted free agents coming up who could be valuable. A Nick Seeler, who's making $775,000 this year, he's a UFA, brings a lot of great intangibles, playoff teams you would think would really want to go after him. You have Sean Walker, who's a guy that the team seems to feel like has played better for them than they expected, and is a guy who, like, had an injury at a time, you know, he was entering his prime. Maybe they thought that they would be able to get more out of him, and they have. He's been really good for them. But Walker and Seeler are both looking for too much in terms of AAV, and I would probably argue term as well. And it's funny because last week it felt like they were closer with Walker, and with re-upping Walker, who's 29 years old, to like maybe a 4-5 year deal, anywhere from like $4 to $5 million per season. And like maybe they would have moved on from Nick Seeler or just kept him and let him go in the offseason. And now it sounds like they're more willing to extend Nick Seeler and move off of Sean Walker, due in part to the contract talks not going the way that they might have wanted them to, but also because they think they can get a better asset for him. And I have to be honest, I don't know what we're doing here. I really don't. The notion that re-upping guys that are a third-pair defenseman in Nick Seeler and a second pair guy on maybe a good team in Walker, maybe, re-upping those guys to significant increases. I think Walker's making 2.65 this year, and then Seeler's making 775,000. The idea of saying, like, yeah, we want to extend Nick Seeler to a four-year deal at age 31 to a, like, $3 million cap hitter, three and a half or four, is insane. And the notion of, like, hey, Sean Walker's out there. He's 29. He's played better than expected. But the idea of, like, we're going to pay him $4.5 to $5 million. Again, like, he might be a second pair defenseman on a good team, but he's not a second pair defenseman, I don't think, on a Stanley Cup winning team or a perennial contender. And so, like, giving those kind of guys the kind of money that's being discussed, that's how you end up in hockey purgatory. And I keep seeing it, and I keep feeling like I'm insane. I keep feeling like, have I lost the plot? Because I was told rebuild, and I knew they wouldn't tear it down to the studs. But the fact that we're having this conversation right before the deadline, Like, mere days before the deadline to me is insane. These aren't the kind of conversations you were supposed to be having. The conversations were supposed to be centered around, how do we get legitimate assets that could help with the rebuild? How do we get high draft picks? How do we potentially get guys who could be impactful going forward? And instead, we don't have that. We're not having those conversations. What we're really talking about is, hey, could the Flyers be a third team in a three-team deal that could take on a ton of salary? That's the conversation that's being had. That's insane to me. Crazy. The third team thing is great. By all means, you have the Carter Hart money's freed up. You're going to send Ryan Ellis to LTIR if you want to free up even more space. Take on bad cap hits, acquire assets. Great. This draft, not a very deep one, not a star-laden draft at the top 10. So if there were a year that I guess you're going to try to like make a playoff run, it would be this one. But man, for next year, I don't know what the hell you do, because you can't go from either they're going to make the playoffs or they're just going to miss the playoffs this year. You can't then go from saying rebuild to either almost making or almost missing the playoffs to then next year tearing it down further. That doesn't work. Like this year, I mean, it really did mess things up, because if the idea was to kind of end up in the lottery, maybe not in the top five picks, but like to end up in the lottery and start to accrue more assets, this threw everything off. And now they're lucky in that Matvei Mishkov was otherwise going to be like the number two pick in last year's draft, had it not been for the fact that he's Russian and that there were concerns about if he would ever come over. He in theory is your stud. He in theory is your guy that you say, you know what, this is the guy that we can build around. This is the elite talent. You hope, and you have to hope that he develops, and you have to hope that he becomes that guy. But they need other elite talent. They don't have it. They don't have anybody in the organization right now who projects to being elite talent. And that to me is a problem, because if you're trying to rebuild and you are trying to build a perennial contender, you need guys who have the ability and who have the highest ceiling. And they don't have it right now. So it's going to be interesting to see. And we're going to talk again on Thursday. And we'll see if they make a move by then. But the rumor that they're potentially going after a backup veteran goalie, or that they might go for a depth forward with some veteran experience, that doesn't sound like a rebuild to me. That sounds like a lot of the same. And that kind of same is what led you to hockey purgatory in the first place. But we'll see. They have a few days. They could still make some moves. They could still pull something out. There's entirely possible that a team makes a huge offer for Scott Laughton. And if that happens, and if they're able to make a deal for Laughton and you get a first-round pick back, or you trade Walker for a second and a reclamation project, then by all means, we will have that conversation when it happens. But as of right now, it looks like they might only make one trade of a player, maybe get involved as a third party on another deal. That is not what this was supposed to be. But we'll see. Again, I'll be back in 2 days. We'll talk about it then. I was talking to somebody about potentially coming on as a guest. We're going to see if that one goes through or not. If it doesn't, I'll have somebody else come on. And there's also a conversation that's going to be had. I'm not going to announce that yet, but Kincaid is working on an interview with somebody. That will definitely air on Thursday's show. It's going to be somebody that I'll tell you is related to, is a pretty damn big name in the NFL, in NFL reporting. And so that is going to air on Thursday as well. So a big thank you to everybody who joined me for today's show. I'll be back on Thursday at noon on all the Crossing Broad channels, on YouTube, Facebook, which I think is back up and running now, and on Twitter as well. If you haven't done so and you're watching this on YouTube, hit that like button, share the video, subscribe, ring the bell so you're notified whenever there's a new video. I saw Pagan was putting out the video of the Preston and Steed Cardboard Classic. And listen, if you feel so moved, I might even open this up for Thursday since Kinker is not here. If there's something that I missed on today's show, or if there's something that really has you excited or disappointed or whatever with Philadelphia sports, you can leave a message at 215-839-8477, and I'll play it on Thursday. So a big thank you to everybody who tuned in. A big thank you to everybody who's in the podcast feed after the fact. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. Here on Crossing Broadcast, your favorite Philadelphia sports podcast. And if it's not, it will be. It will be soon. Maybe, possibly, I don't know. I'll talk to all of you very soon, and I might even have a wrestling podcast coming out later this week. It's just wrestling. Go find it over on YouTube. It's got like pink and teal and stuff. It's a cool logo. Looks like a dude like dropping the chair. I have to talk about Sting's last match at some point. We didn't even get to that. There's trauma with Sting retiring, being followed by Jason Kelce retiring. So you can go subscribe to that too. But for Craig on the other side of the glass, I'm Russ. Talk to you on Thursday here on Crossing Broadcast.